Thank you for joining us on this episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett, where we examine current and emerging technologies through the lens of diversity and equality.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a new episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett. Today, we have an Ask Drew question. So I am excited to get into a fun tech talk topic today, Rochelle. Rochelle, what would you like to ask today?
One of my favorite subjects, and not at the exact same time, firewalls.
Yes. Firewalls are, they just sound really cool, don't they? Like the word firewall.
It sounds, you know, if you think about that, just literally a wall of fire, right? So
yes.
Who wants to hear a wall of fire, right? So, you know, you think about all these wildfires that have been burning all across the country and across the world, actually, you know, it sounds pretty terrible. When you think about it from a technology standpoint, it also sounds pretty terrible, right?
So, yes.
All fire. Let's not go near that.
Like, I always imagined them as like a mote of fire that would sit around your computer and just like burn up all the people that are trying to get in. And I think the first time I heard firewall, I think was around like the topic of computers, like a computer firewall. But I guess it originated from like building firewalls, right? Like it's a wall in your building that is strong enough to keep fire out so that, you know, a fire won't spread throughout an entire hotel or apartment building. If it hits that firewall, that wall is supposed to block the fire off. And in a lot of ways, that's what computer firewalls are as well. So when you think about running services on a computer, like a website, a lot of times you will want anybody to connect to your website, right? Like google.com, you don't want to be keeping people out of google.com for the most part. But say you have internal websites, like something with maybe your company finance, or maybe even a web server in your house, that's not something you want anybody in the world connecting to. And that's when firewalls come into play, because firewalls can look at traffic before it hits your actual service and say, hey, this is coming from an address that I know and trust, let it in, or I have no idea what this thing is, kick it out. Or the third option, which most firewalls do, are they get a packet, they don't know what it is, and they just say, all right, I'm not going to deliver you, but I'm not going to actively reject you either. So good luck, hacker. You can let us know if you ever got in, which I always thought was sort of an interesting way to do it, is a don't tell them they're blocked, don't tell them they connected, just let them sit in limbo for a long time. And that a lot of times slows down attacks.
Yeah, I had this conversation with my husband a couple of days ago. The school is introducing, giving them new computers, and a lot of the teachers are in uproar because they can't do a lot of things that they could do last year. Mm-hmm. And why would they do that? Why would they make it harder for us to do personal things, like put their own different kinds of decorations on the screen or have access to different things? And I'm like, if you can imagine, you know, someone comes and knocks on your door and they want to come into your house. You've never seen them before. You don't know them, and you don't know what they want to do. You don't know what their intentions are. Mm-hmm. Them in. So if they just think about your house, someone's come, knocked on your door, and they want to come in your house. Why would you let them in? Would you let them in? And you said, of course. I said, that's exactly what computers are trying to do. They're trying to protect you from what you don't know. And this strange person has knocked on your door and they want to come in, and the computer is doing their best just to keep you secure. And you think about something as simple as Durham Public Schools, and that's not really simple. But there are thousands of people who want access, you know, the teachers, the students, the administrators. But there are also people on the outside who want access for nefarious reasons, right? So if you think about a firewall, it's there to insulate or protect the users and the data that's behind that wall as best as it can. But you have things like IP addresses. So like you have to inspect the IP addresses. It's the IP address I know. And Drew, can you talk a little bit about what it means to inspect an IP address? I mean, like, so how does that work with a firewall?
Yeah. So IP addresses are sort of the phone numbers to the internet. So like you have an IP address that you're on right now. I have an IP address that I'm on. And when we open up Zoom, the IP protocol in the background knows how to connect our IP addresses together and work. And the way it does that is by these just little packets that have just a tiny bit of information about where you're coming from, where you're going, and part of where you're coming from and where you're going are ports. So if you're connecting to, let's say, google.com, you're connecting from whatever your home IP is to whatever Google's IP is. And on that Google IP, there's a port, which is 443 for websites, and it's hitting that specific port. And all of that information about where you've come from and where you're going are part of just this tiny little packet that flies over the internet and hits that firewall. So when the firewall gets that packet, it can say, hey, I see where it's coming from. I see where it wants to go. And I see the port number that it wants to go to. I'm going to look in my table of rules and see if that's allowed. So for google.com, as long as it's port 443, they're probably letting it in, unless they have got some like block list for bad actors. But for the most part, they're just going to let you in. Say it's port 25. Port 25 is for email. They're probably not going to let anybody in on port 25. That's something they want to control a little bit more, but they can still use their the same web address as they did, or their same IP address that they use for their web server. So it's sort of like a further way of dividing up services between these internet phone numbers or IP addresses.
Right. So, and you've got so many pieces of, I wouldn't say, so many things that are coming at you, right? So you've got your IP address, you've got email, you've got people who want to access services, so like, so you want to access data. So I'm coming, let's just use your home again, so it's simpler to understand. I'm coming to your house and I want to get a piece of data. So I want to come to your house, I want to get a piece of cake. So I'm coming to your house to get a piece of cake, and that piece of cake contains information that I want. So I want chocolate cake. I don't want yellow cake, and I don't want coconut cake, I don't want carrot cake, I only want chocolate cake, and chocolate cake contains a certain kind of data. Yep. So now you've gotten past the firewall, hopefully, your IP address has been approved, you've got the right, and you've gotten to the right, so I want chocolate cake. So remember, you know, and for those of you that are not really technical, but you've got all these things that got to prove you to get that. So even that piece of chocolate cake, something has got to grant you access to that chocolate cake. So remember, you've been very specific. You said, I don't want coconut cake. I don't want yellow cake. I don't want, you know, carrot cake. I want this specific cake. So something has got to approve you getting just to that chocolate cake. So you've gotten past the IP. You've gotten past email and all those other things. And your browser. So even your browser has got to be approved. So let's just say you went in and you went on Edge.
Everyone's favorite.
You tried to get your chocolate cake through Edge, right? And we're being flippant about this, but really seriously, and we're using chocolate cake. Let's just say you're trying to get student data. That chocolate cake is student data. You're trying to get student data. Have you been approved to get that, right? So do you really have access? And that usually student data, especially in an educational institution, that's really wrapped behind some pretty secure places. So that firewall is just one step, right? So you got to get, there's something else behind that to even, right? So do tell us about that. So walk us through the process. So I am a user on your environment, right? So I work for your institution and I have certain level of credentials, right? So, you know, I'm working remotely. So let's just say I'm working in California and my IP address is in California and you granted me a certain level of permissions. But one of those permissions might not be access to student data. So tell me, with your firewall and other permissions that you have in place, how do I get to the chocolate cake, i.e. student data? What are your...
So there are, and I think this goes a bit into security, what's it called, defense in depth or security in depth, where we're going to have multiple layers of spots where you can get blocked. So if you're coming in for a chocolate cake and we say, we could have one spot that just says, hey, we don't give chocolate cakes out here. Like, you have to like totally leave if you want a chocolate cake. But maybe we say everybody has to leave for chocolate cake or student data, except if you're coming from Rochelle's house or Rochelle's IP. So now, Rochelle, you can come in for chocolate cake, but then you get into the kitchen and the chef can say like, hey, I don't have any chocolate cake. Or the chef may say, you've already had your chocolate cake for today. I don't want to give you another chocolate cake. And that's another layer of security that you're going to have to pass through. And many times, like, we're just talking about two layers right here, which was, you know, the firewall or the gatekeeper keeping you from getting in. And then someone even doing a deeper look and saying, you've already had cake, I don't want to do that. Or it could be that the chef is like, well, Rochelle needs to go on a diet, so we're not going to give her any cake. Any number of reasons. Sort of like if you use a web account for your email, right? Like if you go to outlook.com, just because you can get to outlook.com doesn't mean that you can get to your exact email. Like you are still going to have to put in a username and password, and also probably a second factor authentication, all to get into that spot. So it's going to be like multiple walls that you have to get through. And entering each of those walls is usually hard. We haven't really talked about it, but firewalls can also go the other way. They can prevent you from getting out of somewhere. So a lot of spots where there are like protected data or places that they don't want data leaking out, they will have outgoing firewalls that say, hey, you can come in like a Roche Motel. You can send stuff to us, but you can never get it back out. And that's sort of an interesting approach as well.
So when you think about firewalls, we always think about the good pieces of firewalls. So we just talked about you can get in and you could possibly not get out. But so and we know the examples in organizations why they have firewalls. But are there instances where firewalls are not good? Are there instances where you would not want a firewall in place when you're like as a home user? Would you not want a firewall? Or are there instances where you could see a firewall not being a good example?
I think for a home user, you generally always want a firewall. And like whether folks are aware of it or not, they probably already are behind a firewall just from their like the router you get from your ISP, right? So if you open up your laptop and spin up a web server that you can get to from without inside your home, no one from outside your home is going to be able to get into that because of the firewall on your router. And that's a good thing. Where I think it can be bad is if you need really low latency, or like low latency pretty much means high speed, right? If I want to transfer data as fast as humanly possible from one location to another. Yes, gaming. And that's where latency is super important, right? Like they talk about, you know, sub-millisecond latency can cause noticeable issues in gaming. So you want to have it as fast as possible. And you want to minimize your use of the firewall there, right? Like you don't want a firewall having to inspect every single packet that's going out and also coming back in. And that was sort of a cool thing that Microsoft did, was they invented, I think it's called... it's like networking plug and play I think it was created for the Xbox you've got a router. The router's not letting anything in. Well, that sucks when you're playing video games, because you don't want to have to go all the way back to Microsoft to have another player connect to your game system, because that's going to add latency. So they introduced this concept called, I think it's called plug and play, where when your Xbox connects out, it tells the router, hey, I want you to open up some ports back in that come around the firewall and just make it easy so that we can play video games without latency. And that works, I mean, surprisingly well. There have been attacks against that type of service, but most of those attacks have been sort of the part of the manufacturer, not the part of the protocol itself. So that was sort of an interesting way to get around firewalls that is easy for the consumer to use, because like from the two of us on this call, like I personally hate configuring firewalls. Rochelle, like I'm sure you're not a fan of configuring firewalls. Like it's not the world's most simple thing. And asking a consumer to do that would be next to impossible.
Right. And I think that in large measure, we almost always accept a default setup of firewalls from the ISP, Internet Service Provider. I'm sorry, I hate using acronyms. We are so used to it, we almost forget about it. You know, talking to consumers, but internet service provider, we almost accept the default firewall that they set with us. And I hate to say this out loud, but if you want to know what most internet proxies are, was 192.168.1.0 or something like that. It's the default, whatever the default is.
Yeah.
most technical people change theirs to something a little bit different, but not very
Oh,
much.
yeah. Yeah.
And then, when you get comfortable with it, you can change it, and fool around with it, there was a lot of talk a few years ago about making it more secure in your home, and different levels of proxy in your home. But I will say that, home computing is very different from organizational computing. Very, very different, because we have different things you're trying to protect at home. You're trying to protect your identity, right? And your money, what little bit of money you have at home. Where in organizations, you have end user identities, you have large scale money, you have a lot of other things you're trying to protect, and so there's a lot of difference. When we were started talking about firewall, when you sent me this about the firewall, I started thinking about honeypots, and oh,
Oh, yeah.
my mind went off the rails with it, and so many other pieces and parts. I was thinking about the different layers, like, where do you start? So is the firewall the beginning? Is cookies the beginning? There's so where do you start with this? So I had so many questions I wanted to ask you, but so where what is the future of firewalls, and is there a difference in organizational firewalls and consumer firewalls?
So I think there is a difference. Like, I mean, cost and throughput is a big difference, right? Like the router that you have at your house or the firewall you have at your house can probably handle your family pretty well, but it probably can't handle 100 employees using the internet full time. So like a corporate firewall mostly uses the same concepts, but it's going to be a much like heftier piece of hardware. That's a lot more expensive and is going to have a lot more things built in around redundancy. And if things go down, making sure that internet connections stay up. I think they are changing a bit, though. Like we mostly talked about IP addresses and ports being blocked, but newer firewalls can do a lot more with like looking at the actual traffic and saying, hey, this person is requesting this like one address. And even though we allow that address to be queried, this person's requesting it like 5,000 times a minute, 24/7, 365. Like that's something that we probably want to block. And that was sort of the beginning of these, we'll call them like smarter firewalls. And where I'm curious to see it go is now with the advent of all this AI stuff, like we think about looking at traffic and, analyzing what's the common usage for traffic going through a firewall. Well, if we're using something with AI, we can look at that normal baseline and then start seeing outliers. And then, in theory, start blocking those outliers or start digging into them more and just sort of seeing, like, hey, we don't need to program 100% of everything that's going to be blocked. Maybe there will be algorithms or machine learning pieces that can just go through and say, eh, 99 out of 100 people are using it this way. That one out of 100 might be doing something bad. We're going to either maybe not block, but maybe we're going to do some extra logging to investigate it later or do something like that. And I think to me, that's really interesting because a lot of times, if you're not looking at logs or you don't have the right alert set up, stuff can get by. Scary stuff can get by, and that's generally bad.
Yeah, exactly. And I was thinking about that. So when you think about transactions on the internet, right? So one good example is banking transactions, right? So let's just say you're out somewhere and you're my age, you young babies, y'all don't have this problem, but every once in a while you forget your password, try to enter it over and over and over again. The threshold for exceeding attempts, if you think about that from firewall perspective, right? So the banking application will allow you a certain number of attempts, and then it'll say you exceed your attempt, and it'll block you, right? So that same concept exists in firewalls and other things like that. So like you're trying it. So will AI then make some change in firewalls that allow it to also look at that? So where are you, right? Are you in your location? So are you in North Carolina, for example? Are you the same? So is there information it can collect about you to know you are the right person? Or are you somebody trying to steal someone's identity or try to, spoof this so I can get in and do something nefarious, right?
And it can absolutely tell a lot of that stuff. And I think that's going to be, I mean, I assume that's coming like any day now if that's not already in place on a lot of these firewalls. It's just doing exactly what you said, like Well, you know, Rochelle usually dials in from Durham, but that's weird. Today she's dialing in from like the middle of Russia, and we've never really seen Rochelle go to Russia before, so that might be bad. It sort of reminds me of like when the credit card companies first started getting pretty aggressive against watching out for credit card fraud. We would not always, but when we were, if we ever like took a day trip or went on vacation, a lot of times we would go somewhere, say we would stop at a rest stop and use our credit card at a vending machine or something. A lot of times that would get marked as fraud, and we would get a call from the credit card provider being like, "Hey, your credit card got used in like a really shady way. Are you sure that's you?" And we'd have to say, "Yeah, that's us. We were, you know, we're driving through a rest stop and got thirsty, or you know, this is our first time in Williamsburg, so we've never gotten a we've never gotten a hotel here, but that is us." But nowadays, I feel like they've gotten so good that we never really hear from the credit card company. Like, I think they've gotten much more accurate at detecting fraud like that, and it's very similar to what direction I think firewalls are going.
Yeah, I think so too. And the question is so we see the, I should say, the explosion of artificial intelligence and robotics and all these things. You know, it is almost inevitable that artificial intelligence will move into the security world in a way that is almost, I mean, it's almost indescribable. There's this new movie coming out. I can't think of the name of it. I just saw a preview from it the other day where AI is coming and it's just
Oh,
taking.
the creator.
Yes. And you know, it's just one of those things that just constantly reinforced to us that AI is coming and we're going to become pawns to AI. So, you know, when you think about that, the technology that we're talking about, like it's almost inevitable that AI would do this better than we can, even thinking about how we have programmed security, you know, methods to make us secure. AI will figure out these things much better than we can because we're probably leaving loopholes where AI can fill these things and close it really quickly. I remember the first time I set up a honeypot environment. It was so bad, Drew. When I went back and reviewed it, I'm like, my God, you know, my dog would probably could do this better than I can because I didn't figure out all the places where, you know, when you think about this, you know, there are a lot of mesh networks around now, but honeypots have a lot of the same concepts built in it, you know. So, you know, catching all the little places where you don't anticipate this is what could happen. So I'm assuming AI would do this much better than we could. Even the smartest people, I can't think of the guy. There was a guy, Richard Beaver, and there was a guy that worked for Richard. He's so smart. I think he left. He went to work for someone else. I can't think of his name, but he was brilliant and
Was that
secure.
Artem?
Say it
Or
again.
Je Artem or Jesse?
Jesse.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember. Jesse, he went to work for
Yeah, he went. Yeah, Jesse's great. I love Jesse.
he too. He, brilliant, brilliant guy. You know, and he usually was sharp. You know, he catch it right away. You know, and he, you know, as soon as someone mentioned that something was wrong, he fixed it and came up with what else could be going. You know, something like that. You know, and like AI, he and AI would probably be a good marriage because they'd figure out everything and be something new. Like those kinds of things. So where do you see AI and firewalls and any other security? Do you see something else?
So, I mean, I think we still got a little bit to go to tie all of that together. And a lot of it, honestly, probably goes towards privacy, right? Like, do you want your behaviors being used to train security projects? Like, a lot of people are probably ambivalent about it. A lot of people are probably fine with it. And there's probably a lot of people that are completely against it. So I think, and this is probably a bigger concern for AI in general, but all of those privacy pieces are so, like, I honestly don't know how they can get the privacy bit untangled from the way it is now. Folks, there are some lawsuits against, I think, OpenAI, where OpenAI is obviously trained against copyrighted material because people can ask it a question and get text that's more or less exactly what they wrote and never gave permission for. And that text is not something that you can just rip out of the AI algorithm. Like, it's baked in. It's like, you know, the pee is already in the pool there. You can't just take the pee out of the pool without draining the pool. And it's going to be really hard to do that. But I think one way or another, everything is moving that direction. And it As far as security goes, it may end up being a good thing, but it may be at the cost of people's privacy, which also sucks.
And I just think that the last time we talked about technology and cars, but I just don't see that there's a place in any area of our lives that AI is not going to be. You know, food, your health, every part of your lives, AI is going to be there. For what we do, and I shouldn't even say we anymore, for what you do, I just can't see how there is not going to be AI, how there's not going to be artificial intelligence in that, coding, you know, writing programs to do things. Like, give your concept, like, you know, like you write an outline of what you want to do and give it to AI, and I'm almost 100% that would be there. Like, even security, you know, like how secure you want your network. And, you know, what I imagine, what was the thing the health system was trying to do and the doctors pushed back about it? Open or airlock, air something. I can't remember what it was. Air something, and I can't remember what. And it didn't really get much traction. I've heard about it in other healthcare spaces as well. Bunch of doctors pushed against. I was talking to a group of doctors in Phoenix about a month or so ago, and they were talking about it. And I was like, that's the most brain dead idea I'd ever heard, you know, because it locked them down so tight that the doctor have freedom to be doctors, right? But I think the new AI is probably going to do much worse than that. I think it's going to make it so that it's going to be so secure, you know, you don't even know your own name, right? So they're going to take the name away from you because your name is insecure, right? So getting your name, they can then find out where you work, right? They can find out where you live, they can find out what you like, and that makes you insecure, right? So it's going to try to figure out how to make that more secure. So you're going to be like some code, right? So, you know, you're going to become Drew. There's going to be no R, probably no E, probably no W. You know, it's going to come up with
It'll
some
probably just be
concept,
a long number.
right? That's what you're going to become in order to make you more secure, right? And as that stuff grows, you know, that's why humans are going to have to become embedded in this AI as opposed to allowing AI to do it all. Been doing as of late is just letting AI go and where it goes. So, Drew, get you an AI second wife.
Yes. And I honestly, like, I'm not looking forward to a second AI wife, but I am looking forward to being able to like take all of my notes and like convert that into something that I can like use later on, right? Like, what how awesome would it be if you could, privacy aside, like not send it off to Microsoft, but have something that like you owned and that you could process your data through, that you could just feed it, like feed it information about you, right? Like feed it your emails, feed it, like I think about this podcast, right? We could transcribe this podcast and feed it into an AI algorithm. And now the AI can like get a good impression of who we are based off of what we said. And that's, it seems sort of, I don't know what the right, it seems a little corny, but I would also sort of like that at times. There are times when like, I just don't want to have to like think back through my memory and remember something. If I could just say, hey, local AI, where did I put this that one file that I've created 10 years ago? And it could go back through, say, looks through my command history as well, right? Maybe I'm dumping that in also. Like all of those things could be just so easily accessible. I find that very very attractive as like a technologist, like being able to take the essence of all the technology you did and put it in a robot that you can ask questions like a human.
Yeah, I do too. But you know, I've been working on that Kaggle thing for our podcast. And one of the things I noticed is how repetitive our speech is. The words that we say often, like so. You know, it's amazing to me what this AI does, you know. And so what I was thinking about firewalls and other types of security, the thing that I think about more is how secure it will be. You know, so like will you be able to control, right? So like, right, I say the word right a lot. You know, it's one of my favorite words is right. And I say it in the speech, and my son says to me, I say 5011 a lot. And at the end of the day, and
What
every
is
day,
5011?
like you have a lot. I have like 11 dogs. I have two dogs, but I have 5011 dogs. you know.
Got it.
So, you know, like it finds all the flaws. So when you run the thing through Kaggle and OpenAI, it comes back with all the, and, you know, and they often bunch up together. Yeah. So, and thinking about that in firewalls, you know, like what will it detect? So will it detect how often, like, so for example, let's just say at the end of the day, you finish and you log off and then you log back in again. Will it see that as a security concern? Like, are you trying to do something nefarious? You know, so when I was thinking, I worked, you know, like, you know, I'd work all day and then like say 7 or 8 o'clock at night, I forgot to do something, go back and log in again. You know, like how will it see behaviors? Will it see those as good behaviors or not? Or will it alert? So I don't know if you remember this about ServiceNow, like if a ticket came in and it sat open for more than 2 hours, it would send an alert to the manager, you know, tracking those kind of behaviors, you know, like what will AI find when it looks at these firewalls and other security mechanisms? And will it see those mechanisms as methods of concern, or will it see it as just, you know, human behavior and, oh, we'll just disregard that?
Yeah. And I think the answer is it's going to do both. And in a lot of ways, doing it with, like, say, firewall logs would be a lot easier because all of those are structured. You know exactly what's coming in and exactly what's going out versus like a conversation between the two of us. That's a little harder, right? Like it's structured because it's usually one person talking and then the other person talking, but the things we're saying may or may not even be real words, right? Like there's nothing saying that everything comes out of my word, out of my mouth is a real word, because many things are not. And those sort of unexpected, unformatted things are what AI is going to have a hard time dealing with, but it's getting there and it's getting better.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's work, but you know, it's going to come how it's going to come. What I hope is we don't lose the human piece of it, right? We don't lose, we just let AI run rampant, that we as humans stay in the midst of it and stay on top. Like we write code that it forces it to come back to humanity. So if it sees too much of these behaviors, that it forces it to go back and ask a human, is this the right thing to do, as opposed to letting it use its own judgment and go on, you know, so that movie you just mentioned does not have legs.
Yeah, exactly. I'm looking forward to that movie, though. It looks pretty cool.
Do you not get that movie, Drew?
It's going to be great. And it's one of the things I sort of like about that is it looks like they're being very, like, sympathetic to the AI robots, which, I don't know, I think that's sort of a cool sci-fi concept is, you know, when is a robot, when is it good to treat a robot like a human? And I think that's a question we don't really know the answer to right now.
I can't wait till you make your movie. What I want you to do is I want you to make your movie and put a human brain in it, right? So find a way, you know, somebody dies to preserve the human brain and then transfer the human brain and put a heart into the robot. So it's a machine, but it has a human brain and a human heart, and it's able to learn how to feel and think. And what I want you to do is marry the robot to a Black woman. And how it turns out.
That sounds great.
So I'm happy to write part of the script, but you got to make it movie. So I want to write the beginning part of the script, but I want you to figure out all the other pieces. The way it ends, the way it has to end, is humanity and innovation or technology finds a way to live together peacefully. They fix climate control. They find peace on Earth. So all the countries on the planet find a way to peacefully live together and see the benefits of all of them. So they're not at war with each other. They don't always get along. They don't see eye to eye, but they don't go to war. They don't blow the planet. They see the value of the planet. So I'm going to write the beginning, you write all the rest. And all the right. End. But I'm serious, Drew. I'm not joking. I mean, I do think that there is a way to save the world. And the part is that humanity and technology come together.
No, I think that's excellent. I think that's a good, a nice, happy note to wrap up on. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Please shoot us any feedback or questions, comments, concerns, anything at all to imminentteachnology@gmail.com. And we will talk to you all soon.